Hi, I'm Noam.
And I'm Noga. Welcome to the podcast Suzy Q's. In each episode, we will cover another aspect of the Israeli swing dancing and the worldwide swing dance culture. We will talk with teachers, dancers, musicians, and more.
In today's episode, we interview Suleiman from Bangkok Swing, Thailand. We talk with Suleiman about how he got into the dance, the evolution of Bangkok's vibrant swing dance culture, his career as a dance teacher and part of the school's management, and so much more.
Let's go.
Hi, Suleiman. It's a great pleasure talking with you.
Just first off, thank you very much for this. Super appreciate it. Appreciate your time as well.
So we'll start at the beginning. How did you get to know swing dancing and swing music?
So it started eight years ago. And actually, my friend, his name is Oat, he went to the States for university, and then he picked up swing dancing there in his university. When he came back to Bangkok, basically, there was nowhere you can go to dance. So he started by teaching like one friend, and then two friends, and then three friends. And then eventually I joined. I was studying with him for about a year, and then I decided to go to Harang, and that changed my life like almost completely. I came back and then I started teaching as well. And we are like growing quite well here at the moment, I'd say. That's just like very briefly on how I got into swing dancing.
Amazing. And at what year did your friend start teaching individuals the dance?
So our studio right now is called The Hop. And we just celebrated our 10-year anniversary last Saturday.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a fun event. We had Danny Lipsitz from New York come in with his band, and they did a small battle with our house band. So it was pretty fun.
Sounds great. We would love to hear much more about the band battles later on, because we don't have anything like that in Israel. It's funny because it seems like your community started not much later than ours. As far as we know, swing dancing started in Israel around 2007?
Yes.
So it's not much earlier than that. And do you have swing schools in Thailand besides Bangkok?
We actually have one school in Bangkok and one school, or like unofficial school, in the northern part of Thailand in a place called Chiang Mai. So a lot of tourists like to go there as well. And we actually have two more places, one in the south and one in the northeastern area. But it's like inactive, active sometimes, very small.
How large is the scene right now in Bangkok regarding students and dancers?
So what we do is we have two beginner classes per week. Each class has about 30 to 40 students per week, but per one course, we have about eight classes and averaging between 10 to 20 students per class.
Wow.
Pretty big, yeah. But like in terms of students, but active dancers, I'd say anywhere between, let's say 60 to 100 dancers per social night.
That sounds quite similar to our socials, actually.
I danced with a few Israeli visitors just very recently. I think there was a couple and maybe four visitors just in the last month from Israel. And they were amazing dancers, great, great dancers, like, wow. And I met Billy, I think it was 2016 or 2017, when she just started, like when she was in Bangkok, I think she still had dreadlocks. And now like I'm watching her videos and she's amazing, like, wow. You guys have a great scene too, from what I see.
You are very welcome to come and check the scene in Israel.
Yeah, definitely.
It's funny. We recently interviewed Billy and she told us how she started dancing in Bangkok.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I remember Billy at one of our events and then it was like, she was picking up very quickly. Really great dancer now.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Funny enough, I just started learning clarinet for about a year or two. And my teacher is Dean Sir.
Oh, really? Funny how everything is connected.
Yes.
How is he teaching you? By Zoom?
When I first met him, it was during COVID and we were talking online and I was telling him about how I was teaching and doing the Lindy Hop. And I actually talked to him, I was like, I don't know if it was because of my suggestion or not, but I told him that I think it's something he should pursue in Israel. Like you need to create a house band for dancers there like that. And I see him doing, he's very active now. So that's also really good to see.
Yeah, it's happening now on the first Sunday of each month, so it's very cool. And what was the most challenging thing for you when you started to dance?
The swing out. Oh my God, the swing out was the hardest thing. And then like, it took me a good 6 to 8 months maybe to just like feel okay with the swing out. And then after that, it was breaking it down. Like I'd get kind of nerdy. And then when I dance, I'll think about like, okay, for this song, I'm gonna think about my left arm only. For this song, I'll think about my right arm. For this song, I'll think about how big my steps are. You know, and I try to practice my swing out during my social dance, but not too, like, I don't want to make my social dancing not fun for my partner as well. So I kind of secretly have to practice it throughout the night. Yeah, and it's been like a struggle, I think, up until now. Because like when you're studying with different teachers, they give you new styles or new techniques, and you want to try and learn and experiment. And I keep doing that till today. So yeah, the swing out, definitely.
And when did you learn the swing out? Was it at the beginning or a few months later?
It was a few months. So in our school, we do like short courses. Each course is like 5 weeks. Oh, it was 6 weeks back then. So we have level one, basic six count, and then level two, 8 counts of swing outs. So about 2 to 3 months in my dancing, that's when we learned the swing out.
Do you separate the dance to Lindy and Charleston?
So yeah, we separated by like Lindy hop, Charleston, solo jazz, blues, and so on. But when you get to Lindy hop level 4, or like more advanced Lindy hop, or more advanced Charleston, or more advanced solo jazz, we combine everything. But for example, if you're taking advanced solo jazz, the main idea or theme will still be solo jazz, but we might add a bit of swing outs or something like that. Same with Charleston, same with Lindy hop.
How did you develop the solo jazz classes? Because you said that there was one guy that taught everything, so how did you expand the type of styles in solo jazz? Did you invite teachers from abroad?
So this one guy, who's my friend, when he started the school, he was traveling in Korea, and he met a girl in Korea. They fell in love, and she moved to Bangkok, and that's how they started teaching together. At first, it was her who was doing the solo jazz stuff. But then, like, when it's one person, and the style was very, you know, it was very distinct to the one person. So after our school became more stable and we had potential or new teachers, we asked other people to try and teach solo jazz and explore new styles so that the students also get something new. And now basically the content for solo jazz is changing all the time because the teacher is always experimenting. And it's very difficult to sell to students. Like, here we have a very conservative culture. People are super shy all the time. So when they're like, oh, I have to dance by myself, I don't want to do that. But we try to create fun choreographies to show at the end of class, to show during social dance or during our events, so people get interested. And then we kind of develop from there all the time.
Up until now, we interviewed teachers and dancers from Israel, and we decided to take the podcast global because we wanted to get to know the difference in swing cultures around the world. And what you are saying is very interesting, that the Thai culture is more introvert and less social. So how do you approach this issue? How do you make the dancers feel more comfortable and more active?
It's very difficult, and we have many different strategies. So first, in class, let's talk about in class. Every class will have a 15-minute play session. That's basically when the students will take everything they learn and try it out for 15 minutes and Q&A. Because in class, if we ask a student like, okay guys, do you have any questions? No one will say anything. But then during the 15 minutes, they'll walk up to you as a teacher and then they'll ask. So that's number one. And number two, when I teach, I explain the history a bit about how swing dancing is a social dance. That means that you have to, you know, interact with people, get to know people, and try to break the ice. So every time after class or like during socials, I'll tell my students, here's your homework for today. Go and learn 5 new names. That's just 5 dances. If you can do that, then mission accomplished. That's number two. Number three is we also have what we call mini social dances. So they're focused beginners. Because what we found out was that beginners are afraid to dance with really good people, like or senior dancers. They come to social dance and then they freak out, they sit at the bar or they don't dance at all. So we try to maneuver them into feeling more confident by having a beginner-friendly social dance first and then slowly transition. Like during the beginner social dance, I'll invite some advanced dancers and then they'll slowly just transition into it and then get to know the advanced dancers. So you have to try to close the gap between new people and more senior dancers. Otherwise, here, I don't know if it's the same elsewhere, but here, new dancers will bubble. They'll stick to only new dancers. They won't talk to other people. So we have to try to find a way to get people to bridge together. And that's what we do. And we also encourage like other activities like Pro-Am Jack and Jill, potluck dinners. So we have a graduation party here also for every course that we have. And during the graduation party, all the students will do a short performance. So I'll invite the seniors to come and the seniors will like cheer the beginners and the beginners will do a show and then they feel accomplished about doing this past course, like, wow, I learned something. And they end up sharing their videos and doing the reviews and loving the experience. It's really heartwarming to see this happen all the time. So that's what we try to encourage here, to try to get people to feel more confident and go outside the bubble. And you know, as teachers, like students don't ask you to dance so much. So we have to actively ask students to dance also.
I think it's also something happening here. I think the difficulty is really to find the balance of encouraging the new dancers, but not making them run away.
It doesn't work sometimes. It depends on the group of students as well. Sometimes I have 40 students who are all super introverts, or sometimes I have half introverts and extroverts, or like super extroverted groups. So it's, you have to kind of like figure out each time like what works best for this group.
Do you have street parties, even though the culture is more shy and introverted, as you mentioned before?
So I help manage this band. And this band is basically a group of students of mine that they were like, oh, you play something? Oh, I play something. Oh, okay, let's make a band. So that's a part of a strong community as well. So like once they form the band together, all their friends will come and support them. And we were working with the government to do a campaign called Swing in the Park, where this band will go around every public park in Bangkok once a month to just play swing music and promote the dance. And we do open class, which is free, at the parks also.
Yeah, I actually saw those events on your school's Facebook feed, and it looks very rich with a lot of activities. It looks amazing. And also I had a follow-up question regarding the presentations that the beginners do after the course. What types of presentations do they do? It's basic steps or something more complex?
It's a short choreography that in the beginner level, the teachers will create a new choreography for the students. And the last class they do, they'll learn the choreography and perform it right away during the party. So it's class, and then right after class is the graduation party and the dinner together. So like you have to stay, you'll stay and then you'll do the performance together. Yeah. And then the seniors will share. But then like when it's more advanced, we give some material, but we don't make the choreography for them. We just give some material and then say, this is a song, try to create something, and then show us at the end.
Can you tell us a little bit about the ways that your approach to teaching evolved from when you started teaching until now?
Such a good question. That's a difficult one. The evolution of teaching, definitely like there's an evolution because you travel, you go abroad, you learn with, you know, all these world-class dancers, and you pick up on new things and you talk to other local teachers and you come back and you try to adapt these things as well. For me, I think like the dance is one thing. So we used to have a lot of content per class because we were afraid that the students would be bored So sometimes, like, maybe they can do 5 moves in one class, but they can't do it well. But lately we're shifting direction. We're reducing the amount of content to try to improve on the quality of the basics. So once the quality is there, the moves will be easier for them to learn. Once the basics are there. So that's in terms of teaching, but also, like, we talk about culture every time in class. We talk about the history a little bit. We don't like have one long session, except for sometimes we'll have a separate workshop, free workshop. But we also encourage people to listen to a lot of music. So we share our playlist. We have a group called Bangkok Swing Tunes, where all the DJs will share their playlist after every session so people can do their research. And we teach musicality at a very early stage, so since beginning level. L1, L2, L3, we teach musicality, and it gets more in-depth every course. And if a student graduates L3, we'll encourage them to DJ. And when they DJ, they have a DJ coach or DJ nanny. So myself or our other DJ members, senior DJ members, will actually sit with newbies and we'll discuss, like, why this song is good, why not, what type of jazz is it, who are the artists. And we have rules for our DJing, like, you cannot have more than 3 songs by the same artist from the same album, for example, and the BPM, of course, and the length of the song, and how you arrange each song, how you're gonna drive the mood each night. Like, we coach people about this, and we have separate sessions on history, separate sessions on fashion, separate sessions on music, you know. So, and whoever wants to join can just join. So that's how we try to combine everything in our teaching.
This is a perfect moment to ask about the DJ battles that you have. How does it work? Because we don't have anything like that in Israel.
So what we found out was that people did not pay attention to the DJs and did not pay attention to the music that was being played. So we wanted to raise awareness to the DJs, their styles, and the music that is being played and how it affects your dancing. So that was the pain point. So the solution was to create a DJ battle, which is basically like a wrestling tournament. So we selected 8 of our best DJs, and you know, whoever wins, they'll be like that until there was 2 left, and then there was a champion. So we set up 2 booths here, 2 tables, and we actually have a screen that will show which DJ is playing right now. And each DJ will do like 10 songs, 5 songs, 5 songs, 3-3-2-2-1-1, something like that. And then at the 3-3-2-2-1-1, at the end, I'll announce, like, okay, there's a bonus round. And then I'll have a difficult objective or goal. For example, the next song you play will have to be about food. Like, it has to be about food. So they have to play like potato chips or coleslaw or whatever. And we do that over like 3 or 4 months. And then the people will see who's playing, which DJ is playing, and they can press a button to vote as well for the DJ, or they can buy something to vote for the DJ. Or we also have a something, I don't know what it's called, but it's like the louder they scream, it'll measure how loud they scream if they like the DJ. Yeah, so every time we have a different way of measuring which DJ is winning or whatever like that. And it works. It worked really well. People paid attention so much to the music after that. And a lot more people wanted to become DJs after that. And, you know, it was just all around fun. And it was really clear. Each DJ had their own style. One person was more into New Orleans. One person was more into big band. One liked old school, more older things, you know. So yeah, that was why the DJ battle happened, and we try to keep that going every year until COVID hit, but hopefully next year we'll do it again.
Wow, that sounds amazing. Like, I'm a little jealous of you.
It seems like the swing culture is really integrated with the school in Thailand. You don't really have the separation. Apart from being a dance teacher, you're also a jazz musician. How long ago did you start learning to play music?
2 years with Dean, but actually I've been playing the clarinet now for about 4 years. I have an office job. I work in human resources. It's not super interesting.
All of us have a day job, so we feel you. How does being a jazz musician influence the way you approach the dance?
I was already listening to a lot of swing music because I like music in general. But when you start to learn it, you understand the music in a different perspective, and you become more aware of the rhythm, especially the rhythm sections, and you become more aware of the different little details in the music, and how you can reflect that in your dancing or in your choreography will also kind of like evolve as well. It's very hard to explain that question, like, or this answer, but definitely there's something different for sure.
So you have been dancing for a while at the time. When did you decide to become a dance teacher?
Okay, so when I first studied here, we had maybe 8 students in class. I started learning for about a year. So until my swing out was okay, year-ish. And then my friends decided to go to Harang. And it was a big decision because, I have to go spend a week at a camp with like 1,000 people and I'm not that good. I'm a beginner. And Harang was actually my first international camp. So it was super eye-opening. Like, at the time, our scene in Thailand was very small. So when we come to social dance, you experience the same thing, basically. It was still fun, but when you were in Harang, it's like, oh my God, like, every dancer and dance looked different and had their own styles, and it was so distinguished, and the music was crazy, and they had a live band room, they have a DJ room, they had all these weird activities going on at the same time, and you sleep for 3 hours and then you dance all day. And then when I came back, like, Harang probably unlocked something, and then my dancing changed for sure after that. And when I came back, I started teaching. And when you start teaching, that's when you really change, I think, because you have to think a lot about what you're doing as a dancer so that you can break it down as clear as possible to your students. And then you realize, oh shit, I made a mistake. And then you have to work on your mistakes and all these things. Yeah, so that's it.
As a teacher, what is the most challenging part? Not specifically about the curriculum, but more about how to interact with the students, how to make them feel comfortable.
I think right now, our relationship with our students are great, but what we're experiencing here, and it's a good thing, is that our teachers are all evolving and having their own styles. So what I believe is correct might not be the same as what the other teacher believe is correct. However, we don't ever say like that's wrong. It's just a different style, a different way to approach things. So sometimes when we're teaching and we're changing partners, like I'm not always teaching with my partner, we have to adapt to each other and figure out a compromise or a solution that works best for us and for the students. And that keeps it interesting amongst the teachers as well, because like we're also learning different things, new things amongst ourselves as well.
Is it different between beginner class and advanced class?
Yeah, I think it gets even more in-depth in advanced, because when we talk about what connection, what type of footwork, where's the muscle coming from? Like when we do a shape, for example, if I'm social dancing and then I randomly do a shape that's like, holy shit, that was really cool. What did I just do? And then you try to do it again and it doesn't work. And then you talk to your partner like, but why? Like, how did you feel doing this? Like, but how come you move this way? But I'm trying to go there. How do I do that? And then we try to figure it out together. Then that's the fun part, figuring that out and breaking it down and trying to learn what the other person is feeling. And then like these advanced ways to move your bodies and yeah.
And are there any teachers or dancers from around the world that influenced you on the way you approach the dance?
At first, it was Juan from, I think it was from Argentina, and Remy. I think Remy had a big influence. And then I was introduced to some Swedish dancers, and that was like, wow, okay, that's the style that I really liked.
So there was Rickard and Anders, Leonard, those who were some of the people that I studied with. But most recently, so we have residency programs here also. We try to invite international dancers to stay with us for a month and teach our advanced dancers, basically. So for the past two times, we had residencies with Hector and Sonia. And I think the way that they teach and approach the dance also evolved within the two times that they were here with us. And I really liked their approach. They just don't teach the moves. It's like, this is how you do it. This is how it's supposed to feel. It's not like that. They teach you how to think and create new moves, and they teach you how to practice effectively. And all their classes are brain exercises, not physical exercises. And it was super interesting to learn this year with them. Like, I think they're some of my favorite people in general and favorite dancers.
That sounds really special. So how do you spread the news of swing dancing in Bangkok?
Yeah, so we collaborate with a lot of events also. We're lucky enough to have some exposure in the media. So sometimes a group of senior citizens might want to organize something together, which I'm very happy to do. Or sometimes we also worked with a group of handicaps before, which was also amazing. We also do some public events organized by ourselves sometimes in like the hip part of towns, so like the old town or Chinatown or what have you. And we also collaborate with a lot of art scenes, other type of art scenes as well. And we have a strong partnership with the jazz universities here. So when we try to make events, we also try to invite musicians to come and watch as well.
Your school also produced several swing festivals. One is the Big Bang and the other one is the Digga Digga Doo. Can you tell us about how they came to be and what makes them special?
So Big Bang was actually like an event we do right outside of Bangkok. And it's a camp. We all sleep together, eat together, and party together for 3 days and three nights. And on the last day, we go out to the public and we close down one street in front of a temple, basically. So the view is very nice. And we set up the stage. The backdrop is actually the pagoda, the temple. And people from all around Thailand actually come to that event. So it's free, public event. So sometimes we expect anywhere between like 400 to 800 people. And we already have about, I think, I'm not very sure, but I think it is 400 dancers at the camp on its own. So that's Big Bang. Digga Digga Doo is a similar idea, but it's more focused on extravagant production. We wanted to create a very nice stage for the musicians and the dancers and you know, have an excuse to dress up very nice. So we were lucky enough to have a place called Shanghai Mansion support their ballroom, which is an amazing ballroom, and they also support the hotel space for our dancers and musicians. And that's also an event for 400 people. And we close a little bit of a street in Chinatown. We do a bit of public dancing so people see, and then we lead the party into the ballroom upstairs, where for 2-3 years we had Gordon Webster and their band, and oh my god, it was killing, like so hardcore. And on the last Digga Digga Doo we did, which I think was in 2018, we applied that DJ battle idea to the bands. So we had Gordon Webster battle with our local house band, and it was like the police actually came to the party. Oh. They're like, you guys too loud, like calm down.
Who won? The local or the remote team?
I'll send you the video. It was really close. Like, everyone had their favorites. Like, oh, I like the bassist from this band more, but I like the drummer from the other band, something like that. So close, really close. Yeah. But Gordon did an amazing job, like conducting, live conducting and leading the party. So.
And how did you decide on the name Digga Digga Doo?
We were brainstorming names, and basically we were looking at just different songs, and there's a song that's called Digga Digga Doo, and we're like, oh, that's a good name. We'll just use that.
Can you also tell us about the So You Think You Can Jazz competition?
We wanted to find an excuse for our dancers to practice. So we wanted to up the level of dancers here so that they were, and we had to find a way, because like people here, if you don't have a reason to, they won't practice for sure. So You Think You Can Jazz is a competition. Basically, it's like So You Think You Can Dance, but with some twists. So what you do is you choose your favorite, or you partner up with a team or something, and you choose a choreography you like. It could be a modern one, or an older one, or a classic one, anything, but in the swing or swing genre. Okay, so it could be shag, blues, tap, whatever. And we will assign you, and then you have a couple of days or weeks to prepare and practice a little bit. And then once you do a little bit, all the coaches or teachers will meet and watch all the videos. And we have a system where they choose who they want to be their coach, and the coaches choose who they want to coach. And we try to bridge that. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. Just like in The Voice, you know, like sometimes you want that person, but that person chooses someone else. Like, it's exactly like that. And then at the end of the day, someone gets a coach. Per coach, maybe you have about two teams. And we have different prizes, like most improved, audience favorite. For the next like 6 months, every 2 weeks, the participants have to send a video, or the coach have to go and actually teach or like help them figure out what's wrong with the choreography they're trying to learn. How is the original being done? You know, so it's a learning process, and they're practicing, and we're guiding them. And then at the end, we all come together and we perform. You know, each coach shows off their team, and we make a show. No, my team is better than your team because of blah, 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 you know? And then we make a whole event out of that on the show day as well. And then, and it's good. Like, the feedback is really great. So we did that for 2-3 years as well. We also have a voting system for the people to vote their favorite show and everything. And it's a good excuse. Basically, it's an excuse for you to practice and to watch videos, you know.
What other unique events are there in the Bangkok swing community?
No, we have like, other than that, we have small events. So we have like World Indie Hop Day. We do Christmas, we do Halloween, all these other small festivals or festive events every time. Yeah. But those are the main big ones. Like, you guys really did your homework. Like, good job.
Yeah, yeah. That's why we do it the way that we do it. Yeah. I also want to follow up on things that you mentioned. You said that when COVID hit, all of your activities stopped and you needed to adapt. And in my opinion, the way that different schools around the world adopted to COVID is very interesting. So how did you approach it in your community?
In the beginning, it was very difficult. We created an online TV show called Bangkok Swing Nerd. And it was about 30 minutes to an hour long show where we have different segments, historic segment, DJ segment, and competition segments, and a pop quiz segment like that. So we had to find ways to try to get people to stay engaged. So we did something similar to this podcast, but we invited different artists and dancers to join and talk to them, interview them. But we also had a challenge of the week session where a teacher will do like a solo move or a Lindy move, and then the students had to go learn it and send in the videos. And next week, we choose who the winner is, and the winner gets a prize. So we try to keep engaged and try to find ways or excuses for people to keep dancing. We did that for about, I think it was 10 episodes, so 3 or 4 months, and we got tired. It was expensive. So we took a break from that, and then basically we try to get people to be more involved in the international events. We had a swing DJ global thing that was going on at the time, and we also had like global Shim Sham for World Indie Hop Day. We try to encourage our people to be involved in that as well. And we try to keep active online with our community through like through Facebook, through chat, through Instagram. We try to remind people of the dance. You know, we're still here, even though we're not active, but here's a picture from last year on Instagram, like just to relive these moments, you know, try to things like that. And then when COVID came back, it was like, boom, like people just really wanted to dance. It was crazy.
When did you reopen the school and started producing events again?
I forget exactly, but we did it twice. So once last year, and then COVID, like first it went down and it came back up, so we had to close again. And then we did it again earlier this year. I think it was in March or April, up until now.
Because Bangkok swing community is multicultural, with expats, people that move to Thailand and start being a part of your community, how does this affect the community itself?
Yeah, I mean, we're lucky enough to have a very welcoming scene, and everyone has their own interests. And in our group, you can always kind of find someone or a group of people who have the same interests as you. So it might not be with me directly or with someone else who's a scene leader directly, but you'll find someone somewhere in this space, you know, in this small building. And then you'll just feel lucky enough to be, you know, like there's someone who likes the same things I do, and they just so happen to be friendly and welcoming. And we're lucky to have also really nice foreign friends, expats, who come stay with us, live with us for a while, get to know each other, drink, hang out, party, watch movies together. It's the experience is super fun. I love it. And like when we have visitors or people who are visiting for one day or, you know, over the weekend, we do jam circles for them to welcome, so that everyone knows basically. But you don't have to be in the circle if you feel like you don't want to get, you know, the attention. But if you're okay with it, we will do a jam circle for you, so our local community knows that, oh, you're new? Oh, okay, let's go dance with this person. Oh, you're not from here? Let's go dance with this person. Yeah. And we try to find excuses to celebrate other things as well in our jam circle. So we have birthdays or like promotion at work or graduations or whatever, you know.
Regarding jam sessions, you said previously that Thai people are usually shy, and naturally jam sessions are a bit stressful for people who are shy. So how do you make it more approachable for people to take part in it?
Okay, so there's two types of jam circles. There's one that we make happen like every day during social dance. We'll be like, we have a short announcement, updates, 10 minutes, like, okay guys, this week we have this event going on. Stay tuned, please find more information here. Okay, let's welcome some friends from Israel, from Poland, from where have you? And then, okay, let's all make a big circle and let's jam, you know? And we also have this person's birthday, let's jam for him or her as well. And then people will just jam and we go in and steal, right? So that's one way, and that's more beginner friendly. But then we have the spontaneous jam circles with fast music or live bands, where all the advanced dancers go in and super fast swing outs and aerials. What we do is we mix. So the teachers will go in, but then we also encourage the teachers to take beginners or less advanced dancers into the jam circle as well, so they're not completely by themselves, and they can build up the confidence from there. And we also have, like, when we do Jack and Jill, we try to do pro-am, so a pro and an amateur, so that they also feel more comfortable to work and play.
A different type of question. We have a tradition that during the Big Apple routine, there's a part that everybody shouts. So it happens actually to one of our dancers that she danced the routine abroad and then discovered that she was the only one shouting.
She didn't hear, or...?
No, I don't think so. I think it was somewhere else. But do you have some sort of a similar tradition?
Yeah, we do it. Hu ha pa pa ra pa ra. Hu ha pa. Yeah, we do it. And in our shim shams also, we scream like, and you push it, and yeah, cross over. We do that. Yeah. Takiani, what time is it? Boogie time. And then at shim sham we'll do a. During the drum solo, we always scream something different. Dance in slow motion! Dance like you're an elephant! Dance like you're a 10-year-old! Start swimming! Or yeah, we'll do that every time. Yeah.
Nice. So you have something extra that we don't have. The next question is pretty hard. Can you give us a couple of names of jazz musicians that influence you the most?
Number one will always be Count Basie. Like for me, I love big band music. So Count Basie, and then if you dig deeper, then it'll be like Freddie Green, because he's a great guitarist, and Joe Jones, the drummer. You know, you have Benny Goodman, for me specifically, because I play the clarinet as well. So Benny Goodman, Peanuts Huckle, Pee Wee Russell, Edmund Hall, Herb Hall, Kenny Davern, like Bob Wilbur, Sidney Bechet, Lester Young, Coleman Hawkins, Ben Webster, Tommy Young, Louis Armstrong, the Dorsey Brothers, Glenn Miller, Artie Shaw.
Everyone. Yeah, cool.
Everyone, yeah. Yeah.
And do you have any tips for new dancers?
Tips for new dancers? Oh, it's a very difficult one. I mean, like, you just have to be brave enough to make a fool of yourself, to make mistakes. The first time I went dancing, I remember, like, I was in my room. I sat down on the couch, and then I went to the door, and I was like, I want to go dance? What the hell? Dance? What? Really? And then I went back to the couch. I was like, better not go. Like, yeah, but you should. Like, I really fought with myself. So I remember that experience very clearly. So like, if you're a new dancer, you have to overcome that fear. Like, you just have to take that step and get on the dance floor, and then you realize it's not as scary as you think it was, but it's still scary. But you still have to, like, just keep doing it. Make those mistakes, and don't be too hard on yourself. Like, oh, I can't do it. Like, no. Number one rule: have fun. Like, if you're not having fun, then you're not doing it right. Just have fun.
Definitely. Can you name one swing song that you like the most at the moment?
A song I like at the moment, right? Summit Ridge Drive by Artie Shaw.
It was the fastest answer that we got, so you get 100 on the test. So Suleiman, thank you so much for being a guest on our podcast. It was really fun talking with you and very interesting.
It was very fun. Thank you very much. I hope to visit.
You are more than welcome. And we'll host a swing dance jam just for you.
Oh, thank you so much, guys.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode.
To receive further updates about future episodes, you're welcome to subscribe to our Spotify channel or follow us through other podcast platforms. We publish episodes in Hebrew and English. So if you are an international listener, look for the episodes marked as in English.
For more content about the Israeli swing dance scene and about our podcast, check out israelop.co.il.
See you on the dance floor.